our business income is directly proportionate to the skills that we master. There isn't anybody who could not succeed if they're coachable.
Wherever you feel fear, that's where
you've got to become the person that will attract over 200 different cognitive biases.
The real work in any business is thinking. Well, hey, everybody, welcome to the NMPD podcast. I am so excited because we have another couple of amazing leaders on the show today. For those of you who haven't been here yet, my name is Cody DeGraff, and I'm here with my co-host, Gabriel Klingman.
What is up, fam? Welcome to the show. Today, we got Ed and Sandy. This is going to be a blast. Before we do this, go right ahead and hit that like button. Show some support. If you get any value from this at all, hit that subscribe button. Back to you, Code.
Thanks, Gabe. And yes, as Gabe said, we have Ed and Sandy Cohen here with us. And guys, for those of you who don't know these amazing two people, they have just seen so many amazing different things within business. They have built traditional business and been super successful, but they've also been super successful in the network marketing industry. So I cannot wait to hear their story. But they just love empowering people and helping people just reach that financial stability that they want to reach and take their dreams to the next level. So I cannot wait to learn more about what they're doing and just get into their story. So Ed, Sandy, how are you guys doing today?
We are outrageous. Thank you. And having the first rainy day in 238 days without rain.
Oh, my word. That's crazy. Much better than up here in Maine where we have like 20 degrees and it's definitely like off and on snow. So I don't know if that comparably, but yeah. Awesome. So thanks so much for coming on the show. And what we like to do to kind of start off as an icebreaker, we like to ask you guys five random questions. We call it the five random. And so you guys ready for this?
Of course. Hit us up.
Okay. All right. Let's do it. All right. So do you both remember your first date that you guys ever went on and what was it like?
Oh, Ed has the memory of that.
Absolutely.
I even
remember the dress she was wearing, and we're talking long time ago. How many years would it be? It was 1950.
Do we tell how long we're actually married?
44. I think.
Oh, dive into it, please. I want to hear. It's inspiring.
How about 64 years ago?
Wow.
I know the dress she was wearing, and I know where I took her on that first date. It was a fraternity party. I had just entered Temple University School of Pharmacy, and one of the fraternities was trying to rush me. And so I took her to that party.
Question number two. Who said I love you first?
Oh, wow. I think the better question would be, how long did it take to get a first kiss?
Oh, okay. Answer that one.
Yeah, I want to hear
that
one.
It was a little slow.
Classy. That's classy, Ed.
It may have taken 3 to 4 dates before I actually got into the door. And on the previous dates, I stood at the door as I came into her house. I stood there and then nothing happened. So I left.
Here's the third one. So obviously you guys have both seen the 60s. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So with that being said, from the 60s up until now, which decade would be the best decade to party?
To party?
To party?
Yeah, to party.
Okay. I would say...
I know my favorite.
Okay. Well, you tell your favorite.
My favorite was the disco days.
Disco days. Love
70s.
That.
Those were the dream years. Just wonderful memories.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Man. Okay. So question number, what are we at? We are at number four. If you could go back in time and spend a day with anyone, who would it be?
Napoleon Hill.
Nice. I love that.
How about that?
Okay. Okay.
And maybe I wouldn't have made the mistakes that I made if I was meeting with Napoleon Hill.
Mr. Hill, he's a bright one. That's good.
Sandy?
How about you, Sandy?
I think my first reaction was my father. He died so young.
A good one. And a mentor.
And he was our mentor. I mean, he was such a sharp businessman. And I am of the belief he's still watching from above to make sure that we hopefully make more right decisions than the wrong ones.
Awesome. Okay. So what about, number five. All right. If you guys had the chance, or no, not the chance. If you had to sing with any person in the world, past, present, future, in front of 1 million people, who would that one person be? In front of 1 million
people? Sinatra and I would be fantastic.
Yes. Yes. You are a Frank Sinatra person. You like Buble at all or no?
Oh, yeah.
She does.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it would probably be Cher from Sonny and Cher.
Yes. Just, that's awesome.
I mean, just look at that woman at her age, what she looks like. So I don't want to know her voice, but she's ageless.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
That is amazing. I honestly feel like I've gotten to know you guys really well just from these five random questions. I appreciate your honesty in these answers. But let's take this next step. What is y'all's story? How did you guys become the people that you are today?
We're both graduates of Temple. And when I graduated Temple,
University.
I guess I could give the year. 1963, during the days of integration, Martin Luther King was one of my heroes. And I actually volunteered to be the first white female in an all-black school in North Philadelphia. And for me, that was the beginning of knowing that my life's purpose was making a difference. And wasn't sure how I was going to accomplish that, but that was my goal. And for me, did that for 3 years and then resigned to start a family. Meanwhile, Ed.
I had five pharmacies at one time they were very successful. In 1978, Sandy started a medical supply business in the front of one of my drugstores, and she can continue from there.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how, you know, sometimes things happen and you don't know why or how they're going to go. And, I was in the store, and it was a huge store. If you remember the days of Five and Dimes, we'd sold everything in that store, pots and pans to toys, whatever, including prescription medication. Yes. And we were going through quite a challenge with internal stealing. I mean, if a prescription was $11, they'd ring up $1.
And keep 10 for themselves?
And keep 10 for themselves and put it like in trash bags, cartons of cigarettes. And we hired a detective and found out that they were putting these bags out back, and they had friends coming and picking up these bags. Meanwhile, we're on the verge of like pulling our hair out between the drugs and the money and everything else disappearing. So anyway, one day a woman comes into the store and she's crying, and we're about the same age. And I said to her, Margaret, what's wrong? And she said, well, remember when I told you my mother had a colostomy? I said, yeah. And she said, well, I've been going to the Sunray store, which was about 2 miles away, and I can't afford to buy her supplies anymore. And I didn't even really know at that point what a colostomy was. And all she said was, I'm using rags because I couldn't afford the supplies. And I said, you know, come on in for a minute, because my father was not well, and I was checking out what was possible if he retired on Social Security. And I said, you know, I think I read that was a covered service. Let's call Pennsylvania Blue Shield. So we called, and they said, yes, it's a covered service. And I called the Sunray, and I introduced myself as Ed Cohen's wife from that particular service, Siegel Pharmacy.
He didn't care,
you know, who I was. And I said, could you tell me Margaret Edwards is coming in for her supplies, and she can't afford to pay for it. And if you accepted assignment or at least filled out paperwork, she wouldn't have to pay for it all. And he says to me, you want that kind of business? You do it. And he hung up on me. I was horrified. I said, look, Margaret, just bring me the packaging or the box or whatever it is that you need, and I'll find it for you. And we called our Center City store, which was across from Pennsylvania Hospital. And I called Ronnie, the partner. And I said, Ronnie, I'm looking for this box. It's Hollister, that number. Oh, we stock it here. Really? Wow. Send it over. And Medicare sent a guy over to the store to teach me how to fill out the paperwork. And she was my first patient. Wow. Within 3 years, I had a multi-million dollar business, all with the yellow pages. That's how I built it in those days. Just went from A to Z, every doctor, every hospital, cold calling. We built medical centers for PCOM, which is the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. Worked with Senator John Hines on the Committee for Aging, got state laws changed for children with special needs, because often children with spina bifida or cerebral palsy, sadly, the women were left alone. The men just deserted them. They couldn't handle it. So I literally fought insurance companies and won to get these kids what they needed. So it was a very stressful business, because every time the phone rang, somebody was sick or dying or cancer. We were pioneers in adaptive seating and augmentative speech devices, voice recognition very early on. So really loved what we did, but we're talking about, you know, 36 employees, six trucks on the street, $500,000 in inventory, $1 million in receivables. And, you know,
you said you got to that point in you said 3 years.
Say that?
You said you got to that point in 3 years?
Yeah, yeah.
That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing. Do you, so something you mentioned earlier was that you when you went to volunteered to go to that all black school as the first white woman to do that, you realized that your mission was making a difference. Do you think that having that as your mission, and it sounds like that also played a part in this business, do you think that's one of the reasons why you're able to push it so far so fast?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because, you know, even in high school, I always believe that everyone should do something to make a difference for people. Just think what a better world this would be. And someday when it's time for me to transition, I mean, we were blessed by a monk in Mauritius a few years ago, and he blessed us with another 30 years of health and prosperity. And my response was, is that all? I got too much to do. And I really believe that those who give, receive.
Yeah.
And the more you give, I really believe, the more you can receive.
But get to the point of
what?
Selling the business.
Oh. Then the nightmare starts.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. So there was a period of time where Medicare, which was a third-party payer, claim to be changing their payment system. And we all know technology and it can be challenging. But in reality, we really believe they were trying to push out of business all the small independents. And we were a small independent competing against some major national chains. And they just stopped paying us.
6 months.
6 months with no payment.
6 months with no,
and we
since they were our major, you know,
provider.
Vendor.
Yeah. So we're talking about, you know, a hospital calls and they need powered mobility, hospital bed, oxygen. You've got to have that inventory in stock to deliver that day. You can't say no problem. I'll deliver it in a week. So the cash flow, Ed, that was the year Ed turned gray from the stress of everything. And we decided there was a lot of acquisitions going on and we had several offers. But we really wanted to stay on. And in hindsight, probably made the wrong choice. Life is about choices.
Yeah.
And a group of private investors, a group of accountants and attorneys took over the business. And even at the settlement table, I stood up and said, we have to stop this. They were arguing about one of the six trucks. And I said, if you're arguing over a truck, this doesn't feel, let's not, so the attorney on one side, the accountant on the other, just calm down, Sandy. You just don't want to let your baby go. So we went through with this settlement, but that gut feeling that sometimes, especially women get, we were in trouble from day one. Mm-hmm. And we were supposed to remain on as president and vice president. They were going to bring in a new CEO who knew nothing about the business. And I hate to say this to an audience of male, if there are male listeners out there, but
and we're all male, so
yeah.
let us have it. Let us have it. Same.
I mean, he had this Napoleon complex and had just gone through a terrible divorce and thought women had no place in business at all. And he knew nothing about our business. So anyway, made lots of really bad decisions. And within 7 months, they defaulted and didn't complete the payout contract and even stole $1 million of our receivables. So began
8 years.
8 year nightmare. But the only winners were the attorneys. So we were dead right, dead broke, and $450,000 in debt as a result of winning and lost everything. Even the jewelry gone, everything gone. Long story short, we're sitting in the last pharmacy before Rite Aid took it over. And it's a miserable winter day. You guys would probably love it. I mean, it was snowing and it was dark and it was cold and it was horrible. And I'm sitting there crying because we're losing everything.
Yeah.
And I looked at Ed and I said, I'm leaving. And he said, what do you mean you're leaving? And I said, if I have to start my life over, at least I want to see the sunshine every day. And our youngest son was at the University of Arizona at the time. And when we used to visit him, I mean, I would have boutiques there that were my favorite. I'd call in advance. She'd have racks of clothes for me to try and ship them home. I mean, it was, maybe if I go there, my life will come back again the way it used to be. We move from a 10,000 square foot house, Rolls Royce, stretch limo, the dream, to a little tiny townhouse in Fountain Hills, Arizona, before they even had a supermarket, and had to share a 9-year-old car with no air conditioning in the summer. And then downward spiral, as if somebody's ever experienced a downward spiral, what happens? It usually gets worse before it gets better. Yeah. And then my mother took sick in Florida with breast cancer and early signs of Alzheimer's, and I wouldn't put her in a nursing home because I used to service them. So we brought her,
moved her from Florida
to Arizona, and I became her caregiver 24/7, diaper tube fed, suctioned on oxygen. And things were so bad. And now Ed was working for somebody else that at the end of the month, we couldn't even pay the phone bill and the electric bill. That's how bad things were with all the legal fees that we had encountered. And the only reason they didn't shut off the electric, because by law they could not, because mom was on life support. And we lived like that for 8 years. And when we moved to Arizona, somebody gave me the name of a lady on a 3x5 card and said, when you get there, call her, you'll love her. She happened to have the same last name, but we were not related. And we met, and she was very successful in real estate, one of the 5 percenters who actually sold a property every month. And she was looking for change. She was looking to replace her income. And somebody talked to her about the profession of network marketing. Yeah. And when she said MLM, I said, stop.
Skeptical. Right off the bat, skeptical.
Worse.
Well,
because years before.
Bad experience.
Yeah. I convinced Ed to buy $8,000 worth of water filters.
Oh, my word. Yes.
That he put in the 5 pharmacies, and he had to have Goodwill take them away because we couldn't sell them for any price. And Ed rarely gets mad. If I'm late, that's when he gets mad. But he waved his finger at me, and smoke was coming out of his ears. And he said, ever mention network marketing again, it does not work. And I told her this story. I said, Eddie will divorce me. I can't do network marketing. And she says, what else are you going to do, Sandy? How are you going to get out of this mess? I didn't have an answer. And she says, look, if we're willing to help enough other people, maybe we can each get what we want. And of course, I hid it from Ed, but not for long, because he found out. And those first 3 years in the profession of network marketing, I kept saying to myself, how do people make gangster money that can't even walk and chew gum at the same time? How do they do it? What do they do? What do they say? 3 years.
And 11 companies.
I think I beat Jordan Adler. I was in 11. Wow. See,
11?
11.
Holy moly.
3 years. So there isn't any comp plan I have not experienced.
Yeah.
And, but I finally cracked the code. Maybe got a little lucky as well. But our previous company really was the dream. We created a team of 700,000 in 51 countries and never thought it would go away. But guess what? It did.
It went away.
Yeah, it's like.
Very few things last forever.
And I'm kidding. There were warning signs, but I was blind to the warning signs. And it was.
It was a nice 15, 16 years.
Oh, I mean, it was magic. I mean, we had to buy new luggage every 2 years with all the trips we were taking, which is a nice problem to have. So that brings us fast forward to being in Arizona for 14 years. And we started to make the big bucks. Our CPA, certified public accountant, said, you know, you've got a virtual office in Nevada. I think it's time to make it legal. and you should consider probably moving there. And from going from $450,000 in debt, and with the former company, was able to help actually 48 people make over $1 million, including us. And some of them made a hell of a lot more than we did in our organization. So the profession gives people choices, guys. Not everybody's going to make a million. But if you look at the people who can't walk and chew gum that are making a lot of money, you got to say to yourself, well, what do they do? And what do they say that I could learn and do?
Why not me?
And why not me? So we're blessed that 19 years ago, I don't know if the listeners remember Rod and Marcy Cook, dear friends that we met, gosh, maybe 26 years ago. He used to be known as the MLM watchdog. And he would actually analyze companies. And you know, he was like the Robin Hood that would really call out the money games and the Ponzi schemes and the beware. And we actually together co-founded the Association of Network Marketing Professionals 19 years ago, which is now an international organization. And I've just been invited to be on the board of a new association, which everybody in the profession of network marketing needs to have an association that fights for our rights as independent contractors. And the new one is the SNA.org, or the Social Networking Association. It's brand new with Doris Wood. She's been in the profession about 35 years. It's really different. It's not only distributors, independent contractors, but it's company owners and support companies as well, all collaborating together to do one primary purpose: elevate our profession.
Yeah.
So that nobody ever says to you, oh, are you in one of those things?
No, that's amazing. And I really appreciate you being a part of that to help better the industry, being a part of that board. And my goodness, what an amazing story. I know that we could probably sit here for like an entire day just hearing the amazing story that you guys have. And I want to remind all of our listeners and viewers that this book is what turned me on to wanting to chat with you guys. A phenomenal, phenomenal chapter in this book that you both have taken part in writing. If you guys don't have Momentum Makers, you need to pick it up. We actually have, we'll have a link in the description of this, this interview. But man, what a phenomenal story that Andy and Ed have actually shared. And I thank you so much for taking the time to write that. I really, really appreciate it. But my goodness, just kind of going on with some more questions, like, so you both are, if I'm not mistaken, you're in your late 40s, maybe 50s, and you guys are in this position where you're almost $500,000 in debt. How are you fighting through that? Like, what are you feeling? How are you, what is motivating you guys to want to push to just push through that? Because that is not a common thing that people get to experience, being $500,000 in debt at the age of 50 plus. Like, can you just kind of share a little bit how you push through that?
What was the alternative? We had no alternative. We had to push ahead because we don't give up. We never give up. So go ahead.
I really believe with all my heart that we were not put on this earth to struggle. I really believe that. I don't think anyone should struggle. And, you know, things come to us, and how do you make the right choices? Because life is about choices, the good choices as well as the bad choices. And I just saw people who, some of whom I very much respected, and saw what they were accomplishing only because they were helping other people. Because this business model is so different than our traditional business. You know, traditional business, you know, gave them a job description. We had a performance review every Friday. And after the third review or the fifth review or the 10th review, Ed, you got to fire them.
I was the hatchet man.
In network marketing, you can't fire people, but you identify. I mean, if you really understand the success people could have, typically comes from the right connections, the right collaboration, the right locking arms, typically comes from 1 to 4 to 5 people. That's it. That's all it takes. But most people are not willing to work the numbers to have the people that are willing, hungry, and coachable to learn a new skill. Mm-hmm. And this is a skill-based business, just like, you know, our son who ended up going to law school, or if somebody's going to become a hairdresser, you know, there's always a learning curve. Ed worked as a pharmacy assistant tech for years for almost no money at all before he graduated. Now, look at the years a physician puts in into his education before he can start earning money. And, you know, it just drives me crazy when people join the network marketing company and a week later, I've been in this thing for a week. How come I didn't make $1 million yet?
Yeah,
really.
It's super common. It's super common. And one of the biggest things that, like, I've personally seen is a lack of intentionality within the business. People, like you said, they go in and they don't have they're not intentionally doing the things that bring about the results. Like you were saying, focusing on building that business out. So with that being said, what are some of the like skills that you guys have developed over the years that have increased your intentionality and increased those skills?
Well, if you can remember back 30 years ago, what was our technology? What was it? You know, maybe fax on demand if you had a fax machine in your house, which was rare. We had those VHS tapes, whatever they were called.
They were.
Today, with technology, and I'm a tech junkie. I listened to an audio cassette tape 29 years ago, and the gentleman said, if you do not embrace technology, those who do will leave you in the dust. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, there's no me in the dust. I'm going to learn how to use the computer. Yeah, and Ed's pharmacies in the 60s were all automated with these black machines called DOS. And that's what I thought I had to learn. But I knew if I was going to do something, I had to be not just good at it. I wanted to be great. And I knew that I had to use other resources, like other people. So I would go to events and the people on stage, whether they could walk and chew gum at the same time or not, they were obviously making money. And I would approach them. And it was amazing how willing they were to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you and become your friend, become your mentor. So I sought mentorship. Mm-hmm. But I also learned that our business income is directly proportionate to the skills that we master. And most people are not willing to go through those fundamental learning how to invite, learning how to expose. What's the language you use? What are the tools you use? Because the truth is, there isn't anybody who could not succeed if they're coachable and are willing to learn new language, new skills that they need to have that are very different than maybe in their job that they've been doing for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, whatever that may be. So if they're willing to plug into what's available today, I mean, look at the technology. I mean, we're doing a Zoom, and this could be listened or watched in any country in the world that has a Wi-Fi. We couldn't do that 25 years ago.
Come
on. So no excuse.
No, that's really good. And, you know, so there's like a motivation, like, obviously you talk about skills like that's, and I want to get more into the skill sets that are required to actually be successful in this kind of a business. But being in the industry myself, one of the things that I always noticed is that there seems to be a very, very large lack of drive for the average individual that's in this business. And personally, I guess I'm just curious, like what your guys' thoughts are on that, because it's almost like, to kind of put it in metaphor, it's almost like I noticed that people tend to be in this lukewarmness. Whereas, you know, with you guys, you had this, like crazy amount of debt. You guys lost a multi-million dollar business. It's just, you're on fire now to want to drive, you know, and some people feel in this sense of like lukewarmness where it's not hot, it's not cold, it's just lukewarm. And it's just like, but they want to be successful in network marketing. Like they desire to be. What would you say to those people that just don't necessarily have that drive? It's almost that lukewarm feeling.
Obviously, you know, lukewarm will never get you anywhere. I don't care what it is. And there's two things, I think. Belief and how hungry are you?
Yeah.
Because if you're not hungry, why would you put in an extra hour or two a day on a new project if you weren't hungry? I mean, do you want to, you know, have your spouse be a stay-at-home parent? Do you want to put the kids in private school? Do you want to pay off your student loans for your kids or grandkids? You know, there's two things. You know, why are you doing it? And what are you willing to learn to get it done? But if you're not of the mindset that you deserve more, that you want more, you know, the one thing that I despise about our profession too often is the hype and the lies. Oh, you don't need to do much. You get a couple people and next week, you know, checks are rolling in.
Check
it's
your
a
mailbox.
Real business. Right, and I sometimes because the investment is so low entry-wise, it's not like buying a franchise for 60 grand or $1 million. I mean, you know, if somebody buys even a $60,000 franchise, it's a 3 to 5 year return on investment, not just starting to make a profit, just a return on investment. So you better have enough money in the bank to eat and to put turn the lights on and everything else. So I think because there's such a low entry and people make it seem, but I tell people right up front, it's a 2 to 5 year build. Just like you were going to college, you know, if you were starting a new career or profession, you know, are you going to make money as a freshman, as a sophomore, as a senior, when you graduate, then maybe
get a job or you may make
money. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I want to kind of dive into some of the skills that you've mentioned. So we talked, you guys have mentioned in the past, there's like three specific skills that are really applicable, specifically in network marketing. We already talked about one of them being intentional. I want to talk about the second one real quick, and it's mastering the art of asking questions. Okay, I see you're smiling. Oh, and you're ready to talk. Okay, yeah, I'm just gonna let you guys go. Yeah,
I'm gonna let Sandy handle this one. Yeah,
I think what people have to realize, if you look at our digital business card or any of our material, behind Ed's name is RPH, and most people figure that's registered pharmacist, and behind my name is PS. So they assume wrongly that it has something to do with the sciences, but it doesn't. You want to take a guess what PS stands for?
People studies.
Close.
Oh. I'm a problem solver.
Problem solver. There you go.
Okay. Nice. So if you think about having a conversation with someone, first and foremost, it's about making a new friend. That's the most important thing, because people do business with who? People they like and trust.
Exactly. Okay.
So it's all about asking questions, who they are, what they've done. I now say this cute little thing. So what do you want to be and do when you grow up? Because this pandemic, the science fiction movie we've been living in since March of 2020, people are rethinking about where are they now versus where do they want to be? And when this crisis ends, but when's the next crisis and what's that going to be? So to me, I've always, in fact, we did an event once where I had Ed dress up as Columbo. Do you remember the Columbo with
of course
the dirty raincoat and the floppy hat and the cigar?
Yes.
No matter what he asked somebody, they answered, he'd ask another question. No matter what they said, he'd ask another question.
Yep.
So people learn it's not about telling your story or telling this magical whatever product or service that you have. You first have to identify who are they, where are they, versus where do they want to be? What's their pain point? Because I might not have a solution to their problem. I might not, but then again, I just might. But how am I going to find out? Asking questions over and over. And it's interesting that if you do it correctly, and it's a skill that you learn how to do over time, I remember so often I'll be sitting on a plane going somewhere, and whether the person's on my right or left or in the middle, whatever, and
they were in trouble.
But I'd ask a question, they'd go on and on. I'd ask another question, go on. At the end of the flight, they'd say, "Wow, Sandy, I just loved our conversation. I didn't say anything. I just asked a whole bunch of questions."
Mm-hmm.
People love to talk about themselves. Yeah. So if you allow them the space to do that without them feeling like they're being sold something, first identify what is it that they need? What problem can we provide that's going to help them with whatever that pain point is? So asking questions is a skill that you can develop over time, but you have to practice it. You have to practice it and practice and practice and practice.
So now, so going on with that though, you guys also talk about the importance of language too. Can you kind of dive into that? Why is language so important in this industry?
Well, the word opportunity, I get, it's like fingernails on a chalkboard. It smells of something that people might perceive as negative. So I refer to it as a new business project. You know, I don't use the word opportunity. I use a lot of joint venture and collaboration. I don't use the word sponsor or enroll, just trying to use business language that people can relate to without being, oh, here she goes, you know, one of those things.
Yeah. Just okay. So with that being said, actually, because is there any language that you guys have noticed that is kind of like old school language that you would not bring into this particular world of network marketing right now? Because that is actually something that I've noticed that people have said in the industry before, is like asking the prospects, what do you like most about what you saw? And you're saying you don't agree with that. So like, is there some other things that you think are a little bit old school that you would take out as far as language goes?
Well, instead of saying, what did you like most? Just say, what impressed you the most? It's just a different mindset. It's just a different
way. And the response should be a positive answer, not negative.
Right. Because
there's really no negative response to that.
Yeah, because if you say, well, what did you like most? The likelihood might, well, let me tell you what I didn't like. So the knee-jerk response to what impressed you the most, you're only looking for what one type of response, something positive about what you did see.
That's
so it's not dramatic, just a slight tweak in some of the words.
Yeah, your questions are guiding them in that positive manner rather than just giving them, hey, well, about kindergarten, you know, going back to the whole. Yeah, that's,
if you have the right dialogue and you find out, you know, about their kids and, you know, how are they dealing with homeschooling and all the stress that's been going on. So what would you like to see changed if you had a crystal ball? Let them talk about where they wish things could be. Yeah, I know you wish the kids could be back in school, but in the meantime, the next 2 to 4 years, where would you really love to see your life? And it's them telling you what they're looking for. And then hopefully there's enough trust there that they say, okay, tell me more about what you're doing and let's see if we can partner together. Because it is a partnership.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. With that, one of the biggest struggles that a lot of people encounter when it comes to developing this partnership is the fear of rejection and then actually dealing with rejection when it does happen. Do you guys still deal with rejection the same way now as you did when you first started?
Well, it's still there, obviously, because not everyone is going to be open to what I have to offer. And that's okay. It's about choices. But I'll always end it with totally fine, no worries, but can we stay in touch? Can I keep you updated on what's going on? Because things change. Would that be okay? Those are my 4 favorite words. Would that be okay? Or would it be okay? And nobody says, no, don't follow up in 3 months or 6 months and stay connected. Of course, through social media, and I've got a very unique platform now. Can I talk about it?
Oh, please.
Yes. go.
Because if people are in business today, if they have a brick and mortar business and the doors are still open, even those of us in a home-based business, I think most people realize they must have a consistent professional image on social media, all the platforms. But it could be timely, it could be expensive. And there's a huge learning curve. I know we had a young lady that went to UNLV and 3 days a week, she'd come in after school just to do my social media, the content creation, the royalty-free imaging, everything else. Well, Ed has golf buddies that own a company. And we started using their social media platform, which was a desktop version. And guess what, guys? She has just graduated to a mobile version, a game changer. Wow. Nobody else in the world has it. So if you want to brand yourself and have a consistent, in fact, I just did a campaign this morning. It took me about 6 minutes for 30 days in advance on all the platforms without spending a fortune. And it is a little techie. And the creator of the software, which is pretty funny, gave the app to his 8-year-old son. Yes. He says,
wow. Classic.
This is simple. Why are people saying, you know, it's not simple. So, you know, give anything to a youngster, they'll figure it out. In fact, I said that to one of my friends. Get your 8-year-old grandchild to do this for you.
Yeah. What's the software? What's the app called? Can you say that? I don't know if you can.
I can. It's now available. And it's called Amy Social. Amy stands for, and no offense to the guys, but she's female.
Well, she goes again.
power to her.
It stands for Artificial Intelligence Media Interface. And we train twice a week on it. So it's fun to stay ahead of the curve so that people can brand themselves as to who they are and why they stand out from the crowd.
Did you say that Amy creates all the content? Wow. Artificial intelligence and brings everything into this campaign.
Can have unlimited businesses or unlimited personas. And you just have to fill out the persona once. And then every 30 days, she'll create your campaigns for you on all the social media platforms. She's really a content creation app, which has never been done before. Usually it takes a human being to do it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I'm really glad. And like I said, I want everybody to check out that link. We'll leave that in the description below. But we'll dive back into another. I'm kind of changing the subject here, if that's all right. So with just kind of being a little bit more relative, because we have a lot of people that have maybe just started their network marketing business or they've been in it for a couple of years, haven't had the kind of success that they wanted to have. And maybe you're kind of feeling that, you know, that wear and tear, that feeling of just like discouragement and just maybe even wanting to quit. And have you ever felt that way before in the history of your network marketing careers, just wanting to quit and give it up? And obviously, how did you push through that?
Oh yeah,
it happens quite a lot.
Okay,
hearing y'all's story,
so you're
I'm
normal
sure.
then.
Because
we're not superhero network marketing people, right?
Dealing with people and emotions.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll take a break away for an hour, and I'll put on my Latin music or my reggae music, and go for a hard walk, or you know, or on the bike
or the gym where you're supposed to be.
That I'm supposed to be, and but the first. Overcoming that emotional roller coaster is the toughest thing for anybody, because sometimes we want it more for them than they want for themselves. And we see the potential. And I think part of the problem is unrealistic intention and expectations. I think if people understood, it's like starting a new college, you're going to get a degree in a whole new profession. It's a 2 to 4 year career. Are you willing to invest a little bit every day to get better and better and do a little bit consistently every single day? So you can have little wins. And yes, you know, people are going to quit or people are going to say, this isn't for me. And that's okay. There's not a shortage of people that can fog a mirror that want a better way of life and for sure want the tax advantages that they're entitled to.
Come on. So we're getting towards the end of the interview here. We only have about 2 questions left, but I want to tie this question back all the way to the first question I asked, which had to do with your story. Because y'all's story is so unique. You guys have overcome incredible challenges at every turn. It seems like you guys have lived on the highest of highs and the lowest of lows and just bouncing between the two. And you guys have come back and been able to push through each time. That process is extremely uncomfortable to go from that and to have to push through that. You understand. So my question is, as of lately in the last, however long it's till recently, when was the last time that you were out of your comfort zone and what did that look like?
Like both of you too, not just as a couple.
Life is always filled with challenges. And sometimes it's definitely not what you want to go through, but there are sometimes things happen that we can't change. Stuff happens, and it's how you handle it that gets you on the other side. 30 years ago, somebody gifted me a book by Dr. M. Scott Peck called The Road Less Traveled. And I'll admit, never read the whole book. I only read the first chapter. I didn't need to read anymore. Have you either one read the book?
Yeah, I've actually read part of it. I haven't finished it either as well, but yeah, that's an amazing book. Yeah.
I only read the first chapter and the first three words in the book. Life is difficult.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that till we lost everything.
Yeah, so no kidding.
It's sure it hurts when stuff happens that you wish didn't happen, but then you have a choice. And like Dr. Peck says, you either find a solution, you get around it, over it, under it, or another path, but you don't stop. Because then what are your options if you just give up? Life is too special not to live the life that you want to live instead of what you have to live. So it's a matter of just saying, line in the sand, we're going to figure this out.
Man, Gabe, can we just talk with them for the rest of the night? I mean,
that's
like,
fantastic.
You know, I just, my goodness, the wisdom that you both have is unbelievable. I know you mentioned, Ed, getting gray hair from the stress, but I think it's from the wisdom as personally. So
it's also from the number of years we've been on this side of the dirt.
Yeah,
so
experience
is what you get, you know, and sometimes you don't get what you want.
My goodness. We really appreciate you guys being a part of this with us. And we do have one last question for you. I wish it was more than one last one, but this is one that we like to ask everybody, and this doesn't need to pertain to network marketing specifically. It can be anything. And because we have two of you, I kind of am excited to get an answer from both of you, okay, on this one. And if you both agree on the same answer, that's fine too. But, and it's this. So if you both were coming to the end of your days, you guys were, let's just say that, not to sound morbid, but let's just say that you guys are on your deathbed. You have all of the loved ones that you are just surrounding you, and you have one final piece of advice that you can give those that you love around you. What would that one final piece of advice be?
When you go, have no regrets. And it's the way I feel. No regrets. We've done what we wanted to do. We've had a lot. We've lost a lot. But we have no regrets.
That's awesome.
And I guess to add to that would be, we just did a Zoom call with our grandchildren because they're all in Philadelphia. We obviously can't fly to see them yet. We haven't seen them. Gosh, it's almost a year. And I always say, just dream big, because you can have whatever you want if you're willing to go for it, and never give up. It doesn't matter who you are or what you do or how old you are.
Yeah. I think you guys have proven that.
Now we're having some big birthdays again this
birthdays
year.
We're having a big anniversary.
Yeah.
You tell them that.
A big anniversary.
60.
You know, it's funny.
60
we
years.
We gave
60. You both have been married for 60 years?
Yes.
But I was 2 and he was 4.
Well, yeah, I know. Exactly. Which is
exactly,
so
yeah.
Amazing. Oh, congratulations. That's huge. So all of you married people need to listen to these two. Unbelievable.
And Eddie will give you this secret, but I remember when my parents were married 25 years and we gave them this gala, like formal dinner dance at the Bellevue
hotel.
Stratford Hotel
it was
in Philadelphia,
the Warwick,
whatever. And I thought they were old.
Yeah.
They were married 25 years, and I thought, oh my God, they're so old.
Oh, my word.
Commemorative plate up here on my shelf. But if you want to know the secret to a long marriage.
Please, yeah, actually, this is
Ed has the secret. He has the secret.
Two words. Yes, dear. And then sort of do what you want to do. But those two words, yes, dear, sort of cools everything off.
Oh, I'm going to make my wife watch this interview. No, I'm just kidding.
It is amazing. It has been amazing to talk to both of you. I know I personally, I'm sure Cody has. I'm sure everyone who will be watching, listening to this has. But I personally learned a lot, not only from their answers, but from your interactions as well. So thank you both for your time. I so appreciate your honesty and vulnerability as we've talked about some of these difficult challenges that have happened over the last 60 some years. And everyone listening, thank you so much for paying attention. Go right ahead, hit that like button, show Ed and Sandy some love. And if you want weekly interviews and training with some of the top network marketers to help you reach your potential, grow yourself, and